Michael, over to you.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, I will try to call out the slide numbers. If I forget to do that, don't hesitate to remind me. And as Dan said, I embrace the informality, so if you have questions as I go along, don't hesitate to interrupt and ask a question. Today's presentation, I wanted to thank Harley and Dan for the invitation to present. I understand most everyone on the call is very familiar with the space environment and what's there. CASIS's mission and what I'm going to be presenting to you today is bits and parts of presentations that we have. It's our part of our outreach to what are primarily new-to-space investigators. I'll get a little bit deeper into what CASIS is and how we work with NASA and what our role is in the International Space Station. But I just wanted to emphasize that there's probably some background in here that I'm sure you know far better than I. Slide one is just a graphic introducing the concept of space for commercial investigators here in the United States, investigators from other government agencies who may not have previously considered the International Space Station or exposure to the spaceflight environment as a suitable environment for their research and technology development needs. We go to slide two. My contact information is on there. If you have a question that comes up later, please don't hesitate to email me, or you can find our contact information on our website as well. So don't hesitate to follow up after this presentation if you have some other questions or comments that we didn't get to today. Slide three is just a timeline outlining the development of the ISS National Lab concept. As I'm sure the audience is familiar, the development of a space station took a considerable amount of time and political will and effort here in the United States and in several other nations. And in the end, the decision was reached to build an international space station that could accommodate the research and technology development needs not only of several different spacefaring organizations, space agencies, but also the populations and the R&D efforts of those individual countries. So in doing that, as with any endeavor that requires sustaining funding, there was considerable variance of opinion on how this space station should be developed and operated. And in the end, as the space station was moving from its assembly phase to a station complete phase, people were finally able to really start focusing in on the question, now we've built it, what are we going to use it for? And NASA obviously had lots of reasons for building the station, as did the other space agencies that were involved in it. But by consensus, there was interest in expanding the platform beyond the needs, the desires, the funding ability of NASA or the other international partners enabled to support research on this platform. So early on, there was an understanding that there were possibilities that could not be explored in this unique new environment if it was simply limited to the needs and the funding capabilities of the space agency. So discussion began in the late 90s, around early 2000, for looking at potential avenues to increase access to the station by utilization of non-government organizations that could offer additional funding sources by leveraging other government agencies or public-private partnerships. And in essence, the desire was to open the funding capabilities and the access capabilities to the station for a broader audience. So in 2005, with that thought in mind, the U.S. Congress designated the U.S. operating segment of the International Space Station as a national lab, akin to the national labs that are operated in the United States, primarily by the Department of Energy. And those centers are centers who focus on specific areas of research and technology development to address national needs. And they offer infrastructure. They offer capabilities that are typically require heavy sustaining investment to build and operate over long periods of time, hence the correlation of that to the International Space Station as a model. In 2010, the NASA Authorization Act mandated the creation of a non-profit, non-governmental organization to manage the National Lab. And in 2011, as a result of a competitive solicitation, NASA awarded the non-governmental operating contract to CASIS, and we began operations in July of 2011. We can go to the next, to slide four. So this is one slide, a graphic representation of what CASIS is and our mission. Our mission is to operate through a cooperative agreement with NASA to create opportunities for research and discovery in space. And in doing that, we have access to resources that are provided by NASA, and those include the cost of launch and operation costs on orbit. Those include access to facilities on board the International Space Station that are not only inside the U.S. operating segment, but through the barter agreement, CASIS customers can also have access to the facilities and hardware that can be provided by the international partners on board the International Space Station. And the differentiation between what NASA continues to do and what the other space agencies or international partners on the space station continue to do is that CASIS is designated to focus on research and technology development that has benefit to Earth. And that differentiator has obviously some overlap with NASA's continuing mission to support exploration. There are obviously technologies, there are needs for expanding a human presence in space beyond low Earth orbit that have impact upon human health, that have impact upon communication, that have impact upon medicine, and other various fields of discovery, material science as well. So CASIS simply focuses on that part of the portfolio where there is a direct and measurable link to Earth benefit. The areas of research that we support are indicated here, and they're broad. So pretty much anything that you believe the space environment can have an effect upon, there's an opportunity for you to engage in that type of R&D on board the International Space Station. We go to the next slide, slide number five. On board the International Space Station, there are a multitude of stakeholders. So I like to think of this as, it's the same destination, but there are multiple paths to get there. So NASA continues to support research and technology development utilizing a variety of platforms, including the International Space Station, with the goal that they typically support research that enables space exploration. So that is R&D that's focused on the life or physical sciences to advance exploration technologies, to enable humans to probe deeper into space or to sustain life outside of low Earth orbit. CASIS focuses, as I mentioned, on that part of the portfolio where the research is enabled by access to the space environment. So that is R&D in either the life or physical sciences that seeks to take advantage of the unique aspects of the space environment. And the last part of that statement on the left of the slide I want to emphasize is very important. The goal is to significantly advance fundamental scientific understanding. So although part of our mission statement is to increase access to space for Earth benefit, and that requires a measurable return on investment, we're not simply working at that end of the pipeline. We also can work at funding and supporting research at the fundamental level, at the discovery level, where we can demonstrate that may have significant impact at a later time. So it's not all about translational research. It's not all about testing of components or subcomponents in the space environment.
Say, Michael, this is Dan. Let me get in a quick question here just about CASIS. CASIS is a new organization. Is that correct, or was it spun off from some other existing organization? What can you just say a few words about the history of CASIS?
There were several proposals that were submitted in response to the the solicitation by NASA seeking a non-governmental organization. CASIS was, the proposal was submitted, the lead organization was Space Florida, which operates in Central Florida. They're a multi-armed organization, but their primary focus is in attracting space commerce to the state of Florida and supporting R&D in space that has economic benefit upon the state of Florida. After the proposal was reviewed and awarded by NASA, CASIS became its own organization. We are not part of or spun out of Space Florida. We have an independent board of directors led by a variety of people with science, technical, legal, educational, and business backgrounds who provide guidance for us in addition to the guidance that we receive from NASA through the cooperative agreement under which we operate. We are young. As I mentioned, we began operations in 2011, so we just passed our fourth birthday, so we're in the late toddler stage. We know a little bit more about what we're doing, and we're certainly... We've passed through the first round of mistakes that any startup organization has, and we're working on a whole new set of mistakes as we go forward.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
So going on to slide six, so how to engage the ISS National Lab. So if you are an investigator and you're browsing the web and you see this opportunity to do your research in space, how do you reach out to us? Well, CASIS accepts proposals from a variety of different inputs. We do have sponsored research programs and what we used to call requests for proposals, where we operated primarily as a funding organization. We identified a particular area of research that we had identified the right resources were available to support that area of R&D on board the International Space Station, and where we had funding and demonstrated commercial interest and academic interest or interest from other government agencies in supporting that area. So that's where we sat around the table, and we think this is a good area to invest the dollars to support the R&D. More importantly, though, we accept what we term what we call unsolicited proposals, and that's a proposal path where there's an access portal that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long, where any investigator who has a physical presence in the United States, any institution that has a physical presence in the United States, can propose to CASIS an idea for research and technology development utilizing the International Space Station National Lab. And that rather broad brush approach enables investigators to engage with us, to ask us questions about related to their particular areas of research. So this particular portal is very advantageous in reaching out to companies, large and small, who may not have previously considered the spaceflight environment as a suitable environment. It also enables us to work in partnership with proposers to develop their proposals. So in that case, we can provide information regarding the facilities that are available to support their R&D. We can put the proposal team in contact with implementation partners who are subject matter experts, hardware developers, mission integration and operations support personnel who have the necessary expertise and or the hardware in order to support a flight investigation that's going to go to the International Space Station. So through that unsolicited portal, we have the opportunity to actually work with people to develop their proposal. And I'll spend a little bit of time on a slide coming up explaining the review process once those proposals come in. New this year, we started working in the area of grand challenges. That's kind of a popular pathway now for organizations that don't have a lot of money and are trying to leverage interest in particular assets or interest. And the idea there is to attract public-private partnerships and help enable CASIS to work with other government agencies that have perhaps in the past worked with NASA to fund investigations and to actually explore new partnerships with other federal agencies who haven't worked with NASA in the past on the station. We go to slide 7. Slide 7 is the review process that I mentioned in cartoon format. And here you'll see on the left-hand side a retort flask showing solicited and unsolicited proposals, the difference being that the unsolicited proposals can come to us at any time on any topic. We have a budget template and guidance documents for explaining the format of the proposal and your ability to engage with us and our implementation partners to help build a quality proposal. On the right-hand side, you see the pathway that is available for other government agencies. And in that case, we're working to reestablish partnerships with other government agencies to increase the amount of funding that's available to extramural as well as intramural investigators at those agencies for support of R&D on board the International Space Station. And in that case, where there are solicitations that are run by another government agency, we rely upon them to review the proposals based on the requirements of that particular agency. So whatever defined peer review or merit review process that they use, that is the process that we would then accept for review of the proposals coming in. For unsolicited or solicited proposals that CASIS develops, we operate utilizing what is the NIH model. We convene a panel of external subject matter experts to look at the review of the proposals for technical content and technical merit. We then take those scores and combine them with an economic review, which we've used both internal resources and external subject matter experts to conduct the economic review as well. And the focus of that particular review is, again, to identify the potential return on investment to the U.S. taxpayer who has invested in large part in the International Space Station through NASA. So the goal there is to identify either tangible or intangible benefits that may arise from that particular area of R&D. So in some cases for product development, for therapeutic testing, that are rather mature and towards the translational end of the pipeline, there's a business case, a business model that can often be built around that particular product or the potential impact of that drug on the market. In some cases, though, very significant R&D at the very front end of that pipeline is just as important, a little bit harder to put a metric on, but is no less valuable to the utilization of the International Space Station. So for the economic review of more early stage proposals that are more fundamental in nature, the emphasis is placed on potential outcomes and intangible benefits that may arise from that R&D. Once those proposals go through the external merit review process for science and technical content and economic review, we also will look at them for operational feasibility, which at first glance is just a cursory review based on our understanding, which is fairly substantial at this point in time, of the available resources that are available on board the station. So that is, are there facilities available and flight hardware available that could sustain a research investigation of the type defined? We'll then also look at the schedule and availability of up mass and down mass if required for the launch so that the proposal team has some assurance that their science can be performed in a timely manner. So one of the parallel initiatives with the creation of CASIS is the RISE effort within NASA, revolutionizing International Space Station science. And the effort there is, again, is both CASIS and NASA understand the need to accelerate the timeline of flight development, flight opportunities, and then data return or sample return. So the idea is to move to provide resources and improvement in processes that can enable investigations to go from development for flight to data return in less than the typical 3 to 4 year template that we formerly operated on with Station. So CASIS typically funds grants for 24 months. And we've been not 100% successful, but we have been able to achieve some level of success in getting most of our awarded investigators a flight opportunity and in return of their samples or data within that 24-month award period. We go to slide 8. This is the slide 8 is the NASCAR slide. I just wanted to demonstrate again the effectiveness of taking this message out to industry. Part of what we do is go out cold and call on industry to explain to them the types of research that have been done on Station that relate to what their R&D efforts are, and introduce to them the resources that are available to support R&D that may be of interest there. So on this slide, you'll see a variety of small and large companies that CASIS has engaged with to develop flight projects, and several of these have already flown and samples and data have been returned. Going to slide 9, we also work with a variety of not-for-profit organizations and other government agencies, as I mentioned, that are primarily focused on health-related research. We've also done some outreach in partnership with other government agencies for materials-based and fluids-based experiments as well. But again, just to emphasize that it is our desire to build a robust portfolio and to enable access to space to any company, any entity, large or small, that has a demonstrated need for use of the International Space Station National Lab. Going to slide 10. Just to emphasize again that we're not simply focused on the Fortune 100 and the Fortune 500 companies, although they are part of our portfolio. We have also reached out through business incubator programs, primarily focused at present in 4 areas of the United States, but we're seeking to broaden that. The two sets of examples that I've provided here are from the Mass Challenge Award System in the Boston area, and the Rice Business Plan Award in Texas. So these are slightly different structured and different differentially funded business incubator programs, but the target is to bring capital, access to capital for new startup companies. And in some cases, those companies are not only seeking to develop technologies, they actually have technologies or products that they're working on that can benefit from access to the unique environment of the International Space Station. So we've provided seed money in the case of Mass Challenge in partnership with Boeing to facilitate access to space for experiments that can advance the R&D goals of these companies who received additional funding through awards at the Mass Challenge or Rice Business Plan Award. If we go to the next slide, slide 11, just to show our research, our most recent snapshot of the CASIS research portfolio to show the sectors that we support. We're currently supporting about 57% of our over 80 flight investigations have come from the commercial sector, 3% from other government agencies from OGA, and 40% from academic institutions. And then in breakout of disciplines, we're running a little bit under 45% for the life sciences sector, about an equal split between technology development and physical sciences, and the remote sensing sector is about 13% of that. If we go to the next slide, slide 12, it's an overview again of our CASIS portfolio, and this shows how we look at a 50,000-foot view at the flight projects that we develop and the different components of them. So all of the areas of life sciences can be primarily grouped under good health, and we have several efforts with large pharmaceutical and biomedical companies working in that area. the remote sensing and Earth observation utilizing the International Space Station as an observation platform. And those types of investigations range from materials investigations to understanding the performance of CPUs in the flight environment exposed to the external environment of low Earth orbit. Physical sciences, which focuses primarily on the application of materials and ways to test materials in hard environments such as the low Earth orbit exposure. And then technology innovation, which impacts all of those areas ranging from drug delivery and drug therapy systems to remote sensing devices and materials testing. Subcomponent testing to advance technology readiness level for different technologies. Again, that have some impact here on Earth. So the explosion of interest in small satellites and CubeSats and other devices also can be supported by CASIS in that although they're focused on space applications, their design and operation is very often to meet some science or technology or business need here on Earth. Okay, slide 13 is just a transition slide. I wanted, I'm sure everyone's very familiar with this, but I wanted to briefly introduce to you how we engage with audiences who are new to space, the particular advantages that may have impact on their R&D. So if we can go to the next slide, slide 14, the research environment. We emphasize that microgravity alters observable phenomena at many levels, and those range from the physical dimensions of space where fluid flow is severely impacted by the absence of sedimentation the lack of convection in the space environment. And that, in turn, translates into profound effects upon the biology of systems exposed to that environment. So we use this as a lead-in when we're talking to pharmaceutical companies who are working, again, at different ends of the pipeline. So for those investigators at pharmaceutical companies who are working on drug discovery and need to exploit the ability to grow large crystals, we emphasize that there's a body of literature showing that there are current investigations supported both by NASA and CASIS that demonstrate and redemonstrate the capability of this unique environment to have beneficial effects upon protein crystal growth in that environment that can lead to better understanding of the physical chemistry and structural biology of both target and therapeutic agent. And that, in turn, has even led to quicker testing utilizing animal models and preclinical testing. And in some cases, we've had pharmaceutical companies exploit the microgravity environment for the actual preclinical testing of therapeutic agents in the microgravity environment using rodent models as well. If we go to the next slide, this is slide 15. Again, CASIS was provided by NASA with access to 50% of the upmass and downmass and resources that are necessary to support research investigations on board the International Space Station. So that means CASIS has access to 50% of the U.S. astronaut crew time to support R&D efforts on station. And that includes not only the astronaut activities inside the International Space Station and the search sleeve environment. We also have the ability to have the crew translate science to the outside of the station. And this is where, again, we would utilize international partner use, the access to the external platform outside of Kibo in the Japanese module. And there is interest by industry there in materials testing in that particular environment or subcomponent testing in that extreme environment. If we go to slide 16, another advantage of being able to place devices, sensors, monitors outside the International Space Station is the ability to utilize the International Space Station as an observation platform. as it has been used prior to the existence of CASIS. So there is now an opportunity to use it as a launch platform to launch CubeSats, and that capability has been exploited to great effect by our partners at NanoRacks in enabling low-cost, small-footprint capabilities to launch satellites from this platform. There's also the ability to install sensors looking back at Earth for Earth observation. The utility of the International Space Station as an observation platform has been exploited before, and the example given here is the HICO, the Coastal Imaging System that operated on station through 2012. Going to the next slide, slide 17 is another transition slide taking us into a little bit more detailed focus on what CASIS is engaged in the biosciences area. If we go to slide 18, this is a slide that was developed by NSBRI and Human Research Program at NASA. And the main point to be made from this slide is that as we've understood since the dawn of human spaceflight, living in space affects human physiology. And as we've learned over time in trying to develop countermeasures so that we can stay in space longer and perform at higher levels so that we can go deeper into space and explore more bodies beyond our moon, there are ways that space and microgravity impact the human body that impact the onset and progression of certain diseases here. And those primarily, the primary observation there was effects on the musculoskeletal system, that with unloading of bone and muscle in the microgravity environment, the muscles begin to atrophy rather rapidly over time and continually if countermeasures are not applied. And bone mineral density begins to decline at a very high rate, as high as 1 to 2% per month. So you have what is in effect a rapid onset of muscle atrophy and bone wasting that mimics what happens to humans as we age here on Earth in adult females and males who were in prime physical condition. So NASA, through the efforts of the Human Research Program and the efforts of our international partners, have identified very effective countermeasures for the human crew to combat some of the effects, but not all of the effects of life in that environment. But this accelerated onset and progression of these effects upon the human body also applies to model organisms placed into that environment. So this enables investigators who are interested in particular areas of disease research to utilize this environment as an analog for the onset and progression of diseases of interest. And then using animal models such as rodents, they can study in a very accelerated fashion the effect of osteoporosis and sarcopenia in a very shortened amount of time. If we go to the next slide, slide 19, NASA has very recently expanded the type of data that can be collected from these types of investigations with the first integrated omics study on humans that's been supported in the spaceflight environment. As I'm sure everyone is aware, there are currently two crew members on board the station who are more than halfway through a one-year increment on board the station. And there's great interest within NASA as well as within the medical community to understand how this prolonged exposure going beyond the normal for International Space Station six-month increment will impact the physiology and functioning of cells in the humans in the microgravity environment. The omics component is extremely interesting because we're at a time now over the last 5 years where the platform technologies have matured to the point and have reached a price point, essentially, where it's now possible to generate large amounts of data without significant investment of resources either from the the test subject. You don't have to give as many precious bodily fluids as you used to in order to get good data now. And as well from the reagent side, from the working side of the equation. So it's now possible to collect samples that can provide very accurate and temporal time shots of how the astronauts' bodies are responding to this environment, how effective the countermeasures are over time. And in the case of Scott Kelly, those types of investigations, those types of analyses are going to enable the investigators to compare not only his starting point and end point during his one-year exposure to space, but they also enable comparison to his brother, another former U.S. astronaut who's obviously not in the space environment with him. So if we go to slide 20, the slide I have to thank Craig Kundrat for. This is a busy slide, but it shows the investigations that were picked and formed into a coalition of investigations to explore the effects of microgravity during this one-year exposure on the human body at a variety of levels, ranging from the genomic level, looking at the effect of prolonged spaceflight exposure at the level of DNA mutations and epigenetic effects, looking at the levels of methylation and other changes that can affect the ability of the DNA to be transcribed and then translated into proteins. And those investigations go all the way up to inclusion of investigations that will look at immune function, another area of very active research where we know there's great impact of the microgravity environment on, to the microbiome, to understand how the microbes that live within us and on us interact as the human body changes in response to that environment. We go to slide 21. So there are a variety of disease analogs. So I'm going to go through some slides very quickly here. They're just there for background. You can look at it at your leisure later. But there are a variety of disease analogs. And standing up CASIS as an organization, we invested resources in identifying areas of R&D that had been previously explored, either through simulated microgravity or in the actual spaceflight environment, and align those with the interest of pharmaceutical companies, with drug discovery companies, so that we could then develop a plan, a strategy, to go out and attract commercial interest, self-funded interest in utilization of the International Space Station for their R&D activities. Slide 22, one of those focus areas early on was the study of cancer biology in space. The vast majority of this work has been done in simulated microgravity on the ground, although there are several flight investigations as well. But it's now understood that a low shear hydrodynamic environment, as can be created using simulated microgravity and some devices here on Earth, and as can be easily replicated in the spaceflight environment, impacts the ability of cells to coalesce and aggregate and differentiate. And that has impacts not only upon neoplasticity, the signals that the cells use to become cancerous and to grow. It also has impacts on the other side of that equation in regenerative medicine and the ability to use undifferentiated cells that you can direct down a certain path of differentiation for benefit to repair damaged cells and tissues. We go to slide 23, just again, those effects. We now have the tools to measure those effects at a morphological or visual observation level. We now have the right tools available on board station to preserve samples and return them to the investigator's laboratory, where they have the opportunity to look at a variety of different levels from protein expression levels to genetic regulation, control, and methylation, as I mentioned earlier. So we're now able, over the past 10 years, the tools have matured to the point where it's possible to get big data, to generate big data from the limited number of samples that you can fly in a typical spaceflight experiment. Slide 24, I just wanted to introduce the Good Health Campaign. I mentioned this before, that we've identified these verticals where there's quite a bit of overlap between the different technologies and development. But the Good Health itself, we've matured into a campaign, an initiative where we are seeking to partner with other elements within NASA, the NASA Human Research Program, the National Space Biomedical Research Institute, Space Life and Physical Sciences Research Applications Division, SLPSRA, to translate observations from crew and from model systems into health benefits here on Earth. So this is an opportunity for us to leverage the resources that NASA is providing to us and the interest of NASA in understanding crew responses to that microgravity environment into real-world discoveries that can translate to better medical care here on Earth. If we go to the next slide, slide 25, I mentioned that this effort focuses not only on use of model systems, but also on human models. So we're working with the Human Research Program and NSBRI to try to define a way to build an astronaut cohort that could play a role in the precision medicine initiative that is currently seeking funding, sustaining funding for the National Institutes of Health. There are obviously a lot of samples that have been collected through the operation of the International Space Station that can feed into that, and there's a desire with this creation of an astronaut cohort to build upon that sample collection capability. If we go to slide 26, there are only so many crew members that are available and so many investigations that they can support, and there's a long-standing utility of model organisms and model systems for the study of diseases. We're also seeking to develop those in partnership with commercial entities that and the National Institutes of Health that typically use these model organisms for disease investigation. If we go to slide 27, this is a slide which is intended to show the variety of organisms that where we have robust hardware and capability to generate very high quality data in sufficient N to really test hypotheses in the flight environment. And on the right-hand side of the slide, you'll notice that we now have the capability with the investment of NASA in new hardware capabilities to support the growth and differentiation of cells from a variety of sources in the spaceflight environment as well. So it's now possible to support sustained cell culture in the microgravity environment with the necessary level of environmental control, including 1G controls for some of these cell-based systems. Slide 28, I just wanted to mention that we just closed a grand challenge this past week. The National Institutes of Health and DARPA have been exploring the use of 3D microphysiological systems, MPS systems, which the rest of the world knows as tissue-on-chip or organ-on-chip platforms. So NIH and DARPA have been invested in this for over 5 years now, and the technologies, the platform technologies developed through that funding have matured to the point where some of them are ready for technology demonstration on board the International Space Station. So we just closed a $1 million challenge seeking the utility and testing of some of these systems in a microgravity flight environment. And we're currently reviewing those proposals now. Again, just on background, we'll go to slide 29 and then slide 30. Again, part of our outreach in going to the New to Space investigators is to show them a little bit of the vehicle that are available to them for launching of their science. For the life sciences, our primary cargo carrier has been the SpaceX Dragon that gives us the ability to not only launch but return biological samples, powered and unpowered. But we also have launched quite a few experiments on the orbital, and we're looking forward to orbital ATK getting back on the grid this December to continue their launches. and through partnerships with the international partners through NASA, CASIS can also have samples sent to the International Space Station through our partners at JAXA and Roscosmos in Russia. If we go to slide 31, just a view of the very busy interior of the International Space Station to give the new-to-space investigators a little bit of a view of what the International Space Station lab looks like going through Node 2. And we use this to introduce some of the facilities that are available on board the International Space Station to support research and technology development. If we go to the next slide, slide 32 shows some of the larger pieces of laboratory infrastructure that are available on board the station. And all of these are available to CASIS-sponsored investigations, just as they would be to NASA or international partner-sponsored investigations as well. We obviously work very closely with NASA to manifest payloads. We're working very closely with NASA management in both the life and physical sciences so that we can maximize the use of these resources. And on the biological side, that includes the biospecimen sharing program, for example, for the rodent research investigations. But it doesn't stop at the sharing of samples. There's also coordination of maintenance of some of these internal research facilities. And in some cases, NASA has an interest in refurbishing a piece of hardware, but they're concerned about the investment and their ability to maintain sustaining funding for use of that facility. So they will send an inquiry to CASIS to ask if we have any market research or we know of any interest in investigation utilizing that particular facility. So in doing that and having that two-way communication, we're able to better utilize the resources and the investments that are made by the agency in maintaining the International Space Station as a national lab. Slide 33, some of the smaller pieces of hardware that are available to support life science investigations. And I just wanted to quickly mention, if we go to slide 34, materials testing and remote sensing transition side. Slide 35, again, just to emphasize that it's not all about the biology and the science that's done inside the station. There are a variety of external payload attachment locations that can accommodate a variety of sensors or external platforms for materials testing. And CASIS has access to those too. So for investigators who are working in materials testing or trying to elevate the technology readiness level of particular technologies that will operate in the space environment, there are opportunities for them as well. If we go to slide 36, this is another one of the verticals that I had mentioned early on for the Good Earth Framework. So CASIS is now working primarily with other government agencies to identify their sensor needs, to identify areas where the International Space Station can function as a suitable platform for the deployment of mature sensors or the testing of sensors or subcomponents of sensors that can support the needs of that particular federal agency. And we go to slide 37. That campaign has been a little bit slower to develop than what we had on the biosciences side. We focused for our first 2.5 years primarily on the life sciences side of the portfolio development because that's where we saw the greatest commercial interest and had the greatest body of literature to support that outreach. But we're now reaching deeper into the utilization of the International Space Station as an Earth observation platform. Slide 38, just to bring home the level of subsidy that's available to new-to-space investigators. There is no such thing as an average payload, obviously, but if there were, the typical investment would be on the order of about $7.4 million if you account for the current cost of launch operations, return of the sample, and crew time and operations on orbit. And none of that cost is passed on to the investigator who seeks to utilize the ISS National Lab. So that's the carrot, one of the carrots that we use to attract industry to this platform to balance out the inconvenience, if you will, of doing research in the space environment, because it is still a difficult environment to reach for the typical R&D outfit operating on the ground. And my last slide, I'll end on this one. There's additional information available on CASIS at our website, which is iss-casis.org. We have partnered with NASA to consolidate and maintain an updated presence on a website called spacestationresearch.com. It's intended to be an entry portal for self-guided learning about the facilities and the capabilities of the hardware on board the International Space Station. It provides links to the science literature that's been generated not only on the International Space Station, but also from simulated microgravity research and previous flight platforms. And it's designed, again, to provide an entryway for sort of self-guided learning for the new-to-space investigator. But what we hope people learn from that is that there may be opportunities there that they can then explore either directly with the implementation partners who are listed on that site or by contact with CASIS personnel or by contact with NASA personnel at the field centers who have the expertise and can go much deeper in their level of knowledge about what is possible in the spaceflight environment and how that particular company's interest or that particular investigator's interest can be realized in the spaceflight environment. And with that, I'd be glad to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Michael. That was excellent. That was clear and nicely organized. So let's open up the floor to questions. Anybody have any?
Yeah, Michael, Mac Henderson. I'm sure there's been quite a bit of things that have been demonstrated in the research on station that could be beneficial to humans on Earth and profitable for the commercial community to go in the production mode in space. How does CASIS help in making that transition? So if something turns out to be, hey, we can make good proteins or crystals or something, and there's profit in doing that, then how can commercial people capitalize on that and actually go into production in space?
Well, thank you. That's a very good question, and there's a lot rolled into it. I'll answer it one way, and it may not be the way you intended. So there is an effort to identify what the next step is, LEO commercialization. There are people far more knowledgeable and deeply thinking than I am who are starting to think about ways to identify opportunities for on-orbit manufacturing, for utilization of microgravity and low Earth orbit in particular as an economic zone that can be developed. You know, currently the cost of launch and return are prohibitively expensive, and the number of samples that you can manufacture, the number of materials you can take up all really essentially inhibit that. Where CASIS is focused right now is on utilization of the station to identify and explore areas where there's demonstrated effect of exposure to that spaceflight environment. And there are demonstrated cases in the life sciences where drug discovery has been accelerated. It would have happened here on Earth anyway, but it was accelerated by at least several months by the development of crystals that were grown in that environment and then imaged here on Earth. And there are examples now that are, you know, coming online with the ability to do additive manufacturing in the spaceflight environment that may translate into, you know, potential benefits for the utility of on-orbit manufacturing in that environment. Those are more long-term. One area that we are seeing an increasing body of literature supporting, as I mentioned, is that the lack of buoyancy-driven convection, the low shear environments that can be created in a real microgravity environment enable the growth of stem cells and enable us a level of control in guiding their differentiation that may translate into better abilities to grow organs, certainly to at least grow whole tissues. So there's a potential there for exploiting the microgravity environment for regenerative medicine, for improving our ability to affect repair and direct cells towards beneficial end. So that's kind of two ends of the spectrum. In the short term, you know, right now what we're doing is enabling access to that platform so that technology developers, researchers can find out what they know and what they don't know. And then over the next 5 to 10 years of the International Space Station, we have the ability to start translating those discoveries into business potential and actually identifying areas where there may be a sustainable, marketable business plan for those developments going forward.
Other questions for Michael?
I have a question from the team. I'm curious about the unique model of cases working alongside with NASA. And I have two questions regarding that. Do you know of any initiative or any cases-like institution in the other countries that participate in the International Space Station? And also thinking about kind of the divide that this creates or the tension between more applied-to-Earth type of research and research that furthers the possibilities of space exploration. How do you see that in the particular model that CASES is proposing?
Okay, I'll take the first question because that answer is easy. That one's no. I'm not aware of, you know, I've been at meetings and I've had conversations with folks who work for space agencies with some of the international partners, and they're curious about what we are and what our mission is and how we're working with NASA to fulfill that. And I'm certain there's interest, there's obvious interest in many of the international partners on station and in growing a commercial market and maintaining their presence there. So I'm sure they're doing something. I'm just not personally aware of it. With regard to the second question, I don't really view it, and I don't think it is in reality that there's a tension between what I described as the focus areas of the portfolios. Obviously, anything that any R&D that benefits Earth will in turn benefit the space program because it leads to a healthy economy. It answers questions that enable humans to sustain themselves here on Earth, and you know all of that's kind of needed so that we can go deeper into space and explore. What I look at it as too is there are, in the end, the International Space Station is it's a laboratory, it's an innovation platform, but it's not a one-size-fits-all tool. It obviously has benefit for certain areas of science. It's a great benefit and has less impact or less potential impact for other areas. So, you know, what I view our primary role at CASES is enabling access to that platform so that people can test their ideas and have an opportunity to fail, quite literally, and get stuff wrong, and then come back again and improve the design of their experiment or to better understand and explore the data that they generated so that they can generate real knowledge from it going forward. And we've had success in that. That I view as it has taken time for us to understand how to package the capabilities. It's taken time to generate interest among other investigators, but we're starting to see real and sustained interest now. We've exceeded our capacity, you know, for 50% up mass and down mass and crew time. We have more interest in R&D on the International Space Station National Lab than we can currently sustain. And that's, again, you know, why We are working closely with NASA to kind of achieve new efficiencies and processes to give more people opportunities. And the big, you know, the large elephant in the room for CASIS, as it is for NASA, as it is for the government agencies, is funding. There's more good science, there are more ideas out there than there's currently funding available to sustain them. But I don't see that as the focus on science for Earth benefit is in any way degrading or taking away from the NASA focus on LEO and going beyond LEO and exploration related themes. I think they actually feed off of each other.
Thank you very much.
Other questions for Michael?
Yeah, I have another question. This is Bill Pratt at Lockheed Martin. I'm curious to get your thoughts on, if you have thought about it, how a CASIS model might apply to like a cislunar platform. What are similarities, differences? Have you given any thought to that?
I haven't given a lot of thought. I guess I'm a little bit more short-term focused than that. But obviously, any effort such as CASIS, I view CASIS as we've been a success, I think, to date, and we're improving our ability to interact with commercial side of the house and interact with NASA as well. I say this tongue-in-cheek, and I mean no offense to anyone that works for NASA, but, you know, starting off, I used to joke that we worked with NASA so that the investigator wouldn't have to. And that was a little bit of the mindset going in, was that there were such a focus on mission success that it limited the ability of people to really test the boundaries of what they were trying to do. And I think NASA has worked very hard to improve the efficiency and their capabilities and processes for doing quick turnarounds. I think CASIS has played a role in that. I think that will benefit exploration of cislunar capabilities as we move forward. So there is more latitude for industry to play in that space now. It's obviously to everyone's benefit that as many innovators are allowed to play in that space and have opportunities to test ideas that they can. That's the way we learn and we discover and we advance technology. So I see some benefits there. So both from our I wouldn't call them failures, from our missteps and our successes, I think there are learning opportunities there that can benefit, you know, commercial enterprise as we move beyond low Earth orbit.
Thank you.
Michael, I want to use that last question in your answer as a springboard for another one, where you said we work with NASA so the investigator doesn't have to. How does CASIS help with space qualifying, or perhaps more importantly, ISS qualifying experiments? You know, you can have an experimenter who says, oh, yeah, I know exactly what I do in the laboratory. Here's the equipment that I do. Here's what I'd set up. And that experimenter would find that, I'm sorry, you know, that equipment simply can't be boxed up and sent to station. Does CASIS help with that?
We do. And we do it primarily by stepping out of the way and engaging with the implementation partners to do that. So we maintain a catalog of implementation partners who are largely companies. In some cases, they're companies that have active contracts at the NASA field centers for doing mission integration and ops and hardware development. But the idea there is we have people come in through the door with an idea. We help them translate that idea as for an experiment that they would do in their laboratory down the hall into a flight experiment. And we emphasize to them that that means there's going to have to be some trade-offs along the way. So we have them start by defining their research objectives, what they need to get out of the science. We then partner them with an implementation partner or multiple implementation partners so that they can understand, if these are your research objectives, here is the hardware and the processes that I have to help you reach those. And then they can act as an informed consumer to understand, well, I like what this piece of hardware can do for me, and it helps me achieve my science ideas. Or they say, I'm really not hitting the marks I need to. I need to look somewhere else, or I need to rethink what my experimental objectives are and go back to the endpoint. So in doing that, we reach a point where the investigator is comfortable with what they're going to get out of it. The implementation partner understands the research objectives, has the requirements defined. And then the implementation partner is then responsible for working with NASA to make sure that all of the flight safety review requirements are met and hardware. And one way, you know, to great advantage, companies like NanoRacks and other companies that have developed modular plug-and-play identical form factor types of hardware has benefited that capability quite a bit. NASA, as I mentioned, has, with removing itself from the obligation of having to build station, now they're focused on maintaining station and increasing its capability. There's the ability to invest in some of the hardware that's required to sustain science in space. And NASA has made great investments in reaching out to communities of scientists and technologists and engineers to understand what the needs were in particular areas of research, and in refurbishing or in some cases building new hardware to meet those capabilities. And that's part of what I emphasize with the ability to do cell culture now in the microgravity environment. I think we now have capabilities that didn't exist during the shuttle era that really, really do enable us to do a lot of, have a lot of the fine-scaled environmental control that's necessary, those types of investigations. Rodent research is another great example. NASA's invested in defining issues that they encountered with rodent research missions on board shuttle. And now that they're seeking to have missions that can go up to 6 months of continuous habitation of the rodents on there, they understood that they had to identify the issues and identify solutions for them along the way.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you very much. Other questions for Michael? Maybe no more. Michael, this was great. Thank you very much for, especially for staying on afterwards for some minutes. Let's see. We're all done. We will do this again next week. Thank everybody for showing up, and we'll see you again next week. So thank you very much. Bye-bye.